In talking about the shift in public opinion, a major event took place on September the 6th. Former British Cabinet Minister Michael Meacher, who was in charge of the environment, he held the portfolio for environment in the Blair government, wrote an editorial in Britain's The Guardian titled, "The War on Terrorism is Bogus," and this was Christmas for me. A major evolution. He said very clearly that the U.S. government had complicity in the attacks of 9/11, did nothing because they needed the attacks to provide an excuse for this rampant military activity that's taken place. But he also confirmed about what I had been writing it from the wilderness about the issues of peak oil. And just a couple of quick quotes. He said, first, it is clear that U.S. authorities did little or nothing to preempt the events of 9/11. It is known that at least 11 countries provided advance warning to the U.S. of the 9/11 attacks. Two senior Mossad experts were sent to Washington in August 2001 to alert the CIA and FBI to a cell of 200 terrorists said to be preparing a big operation. Daily Telegraph, September 16th. The list they provided included the names of four of the 9/11 hijackers, none of whom was arrested. When I lectured in Germany with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, I was very clear to elaborate many of these warnings from foreign intelligence services, including the German and the Russian intelligence services, and that doesn't mention the French, the Moroccans, Jordanians, etc., which were so specific that they said that during the week of September 9, 2001, hijacked airliners would be crashed into the World Trade Center. I provided further evidence showing that it was going to involve United and American, and this was all information in the administration's hands before the attacks. And it's very important to note that in the House-Senate joint intelligence report that was released in August, that what the president knew and when he knew it is now classified information, and that's for no other reason than for a cover-up. But Meacher went even further. He wrote, "The overriding motivation for this political smokescreen is that the U.S. and the U.K. are beginning to run out of secure hydrocarbon energy supplies. By 2010, the Muslim world will control as much as 60% of the world's oil production and, even more importantly, 95% of remaining global oil export capacity. As demand is increasing, so supply is decreasing continually since the 1960s. And that was complete corroboration for what we've known it from the wilderness for some time, that the world is beginning to run out of hydrocarbon energy. And that leads us to the whole issue of peak oil and gas.
So let's define this term, peak oil. It's not a brand name.
No, it's not. Definitely not. Peak oil is a scientific term describing the fact that all oil production always follows a bell curve, whether it's in one oil field, whether it's on in one country or on planet Earth as a whole. When you drill the first well in an oil field, the oil's close to the surface under high pressure, you got a gusher. So you drill more wells, the levels go down, the pressure is relieved, but you get more production. But over a period of time, the oil levels diminish to where they're much deeper in the ground, and you have to go into secondary recovery where you pump in steam or water to force the oil to the surface from the interstitial spaces where it's trapped, and it tapers off over a long and what will be a very painful period as supplies decrease. Natural gas is a bit different because gas just blows. It's a gas. So as long as there's pressure, there will be gas, but then you reach a point where there's not enough pressure anymore, and it kind of falls off a cliff. Now, a number of scientists had predicted, the most notable was M. King Hubbard back in the 1960s, who produced what's called Hubbard's Curve, which showed that the world would sometime shortly after the turn of the century pass a peak of production, after which point it would be impossible to increase world oil production, even as demand was going to continue to increase. He actually proved to be quite right. He predicted that domestic U.S. production would peak in 1970, which in fact it did. We see now a growing amount of data showing that world oil production actually peaked in the year 2000. What that means is that every barrel of oil now is going to be more expensive to get. It's going to be a lesser quality of oil, high sulfur content, dirty oil. It's going to be from smaller fields, which raises the whole question of how many millions of dollars will oil companies be willing to invest to build pipelines, to drill wells, to pump and transport the oil. When there's smaller and smaller amounts of oil in the ground, you won't invest, for example, $50 million to extract $25 million worth of oil. So these are the overriding concerns which were discussed in Vice President Dick Cheney's National Energy Policy Development Group just prior to 9/11. That is the task force from which the White House is still refusing illegally to produce the records, violating U.S. law. I'm convinced that most of the secrets of 9/11 lie in that report. We see that there was great hope for a bonanza of sorts in the Caspian Basin, which had a lot to do with 9/11, actually, that there were estimates of 150, 200 billion barrels of oil. And that sounds like a tremendous amount of oil, but the world uses a billion barrels of oil every 11 to 12 days. But what has happened, and this happened right up leading up to 9/11, but most importantly in about the year after 9/11, was that major drilling by companies like British Petroleum, Chevron, Texaco, Exxon Mobil, revealed that this 250 billion barrels was non-existent. The Caspian region only holds maybe 40 billion barrels of recoverable oil, which instead of being one large pool has turned out to be a number of small pockets. That made the oil that was remaining in Saudi Arabia and Iraq all the more important, and we saw a dramatic turn in U.S. policy somewhere in late 2001, 2002, as we went into the run-up for Iraq, where it became somehow of supreme importance to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and the reason was the oil. But now that oil is not coming onto world markets because the infrastructure's destroyed. Now, what's so important to understand about the concept of peak oil and gas is that the human race eats oil and natural gas. What I mean by that is that, first of all, the world consumes 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy for every calorie of food that is consumed. The United States consumes 20 calories of hydrocarbon energy for every calorie of food it eats. When crops are planted in the ground, someone drives an oil-powered machine to till the field, then an oil-powered machine to plant the seeds, then either oil or natural gas is burned in a power-generating station to pump water to irrigate the crops. The crops are then sprayed with fertilizers, which are made from ammonia, and all ammonia is produced from natural gas. All the pesticides that are sprayed on the crops are petroleum-based. Then they drive an oil-powered vehicle to harvest the food. Then they drive it by oil to a food processing plant, which runs on electricity. The food is wrapped in plastic, which is oil, and driven by oil to your supermarket, where we pay for it with our plastic credit cards or debit cards. You take away the oil and natural gas, you take away food. There are 600 million internal combustion-powered vehicles on the planet. So this is how we not only move our food, but ourselves around the planet. People, advocates of alternative energy who have not studied this will quickly fall back, well, let's just go to hybrids, let's just go to electric vehicles. And it's very important to note that electricity is not an energy source. It is merely a means of transmission of energy. All electricity is produced by burning natural gas or oil or coal or nuclear or hydroelectric. There's no more hydroelectric locations that we can build on to generate power. Nuclear is too expensive. It takes too long. Nobody's going to put up the money for that. Plus, you have the horrible problems of dangerous waste products. Coal is an extremely dangerous pollutant. Oil will not be used. It's too expensive. It's extremely inefficient, which leaves natural gas. And in the United States, we cannot import natural gas from overseas because liquid natural gas tankers cost $300 million. They take 3 years to build. We need 1,000 to bring natural gas from overseas. And every time you transform gas from the wellhead to liquid natural gas and back, you lose about 12% of the energy. So we have to pipe our natural gas in from North America, which means the U.S. has now virtually sucked Canada dry of natural gas. There's very little left in the Gulf.